And for our show today, it's all about organizing in the Trump era, connecting the local organizing to Washington, D.C. Well, it's been another 2 weeks of whiplash in the U.S. A tsunami of activism has been meeting it, but there has been one extreme right-wing corporate nominee after another confirmed by the Senate, with a female senator trying to read the words of a female civil rights hero now joining the ranks of those the GOP have essentially told to shut up. And continued attacks on the checks and balances that remain on executive power, the press, and the judicial branch.
Today, we're going to talk about a third kind of check and balance, that is us, the public. What kinds of responses to this new era are emerging in Marin and Sonoma counties? What do these times require of us? What forms of organizing are emerging, and how should they link up with each other and with efforts directed at D.C.? What works, what doesn't, and why?
And joining us to continue our conversation, we've met three times already, are members of the newly formed Resist Trump West Marin. Our working title is Standing Together West Marin. Is William Now, who is part of our strategy committee, William Ellen Sweet of the Environmental Protection Committee, and Susan Scott of the Immigration Protection Committee. Welcome, you guys.
Good to be here.
Hey. Hi, Bing.
Great.
Hi, Bing.
And in the studio with us, we have Susan Lamont. And Susan is a longtime activist, frequently published writer, and former coordinator of the Sonoma County Peace and Justice Center. Welcome to Post Cabin Radio, Susan.
Hello. Thank you.
So in a moment, we're going to be joined as well by Norman Solomon. We're looking forward to that. He'll help us sweep all this local organizing back into the bigger D.C. picture. But for now, let's just update folks on some of the forms of resistance to the GOP agenda that have emerged at the national level recently. We have members of Congress staging a real non-photo op demonstration. That was something. We had direct action by members of the Super Bowl champion Patriots football team refusing to go to Trump's Washington. We had Elizabeth Warren and the other senators trying to use all 30 hours to examine each nominee and the Senate working through the night to expedite it. Along with the aforementioned efforts of other GOP senators to silence her. We have U.S. war veterans pledging to return and resist at Standing Rock. We have the Ninth Circuit thwarting Trump's bold grab at executive power on immigration. We have hundreds of State Department employees formally signing their disagreement with Trump. And I don't know, Bing, is there anything else you want to throw into that list? It's quite a long list of what's
yes.
been going on.
There's a lot of action from the people that are following the Indivisible Guide put together by former congressional staffers following taking a page from the Tea Party and disrupting town hall meetings and making their congressional representatives accountable.
Yeah, and we'll get to more on that in just a minute because I know you all are organizing hard on that locally. But I guess I'm the bad news person today. I'll just name a few more challenges we're looking at. For the purposes of this show, we are post-carbon radio, so sometimes we focus on actions with direct impact on the climate, of course. And so we couldn't fail to mention the fact that despite internal EPA employee protest, his record as a climate denier, his incomplete paperwork before his nomination, and his record of signing legislation penned by the fossil fuel industry, Scott Pruitt has been confirmed as head of EPA. In this, he joins a slew of nominees who are more of a wrecking crew than traditional agency heads. That's my personal editorial statement. But like at the State Department, EPA employees also expressed their discontent while they were being publicly silenced. We have this former CEO of Exxon heading State Department, and we'll see how much we talk about this, but the final stage of construction, the Dakota Access Pipeline, has just begun, is my understanding. Is that yours, Bing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what's going on in West Marin? Well, after the election and I heard Trump was our new president, I was wondering how I would get involved. knowing that I had to step up my game. And I got received two emails from friends of mine attached with the Indivisible Guide, a PDF of it. It's about 24 pages long. And one of them said, if I were to start a group, let her know. And so I put out an email to my email list, about 400 people, and I got overwhelming response. And we had a meeting, our first meeting about a month ago, was at my home and my wife, Eleanor. And we had 34 people attend. And the second meeting followed up with 90 people at the Dance Palace. And just last Saturday, we had 60 people. And we have three people who were on some of those committees on the air, and we're going to ask them to give reports. Why don't we start with William now. Could you give us a little idea of what the strategy committee is thinking about?
Yeah, absolutely, Bing. And I want to thank you for pulling this all together. The turnout's been amazing. So, yeah, the strategy committee, well, here's the deal. There are many very intelligent and passionate people in this area, as we all know, who care a lot about basic human rights and democratic principles and the health of our planet. But no kidding, there are an overwhelming number of at-risk issues and many, many exciting actions and organizations, you know, that are responding at the national level and at the state level and regionally. And so the role of the strategy committee is to help all of us as an organization and as individuals in this community to find smart ways to wade through all these options and choose smart places to invest our time and our effort. And we're wanting to look for opportunities to coordinate activities between groups, existing groups that are already effective. And we're watching for strategic timing of actions to help prevent our own groups from overlapping on work, right? And we also want to help develop communication tools to keep us efficient. If we do our work really well, we'll help all of us with a potential burnout issue as well, right? And help us make smart decisions that are effective. Because we don't want to waste time, but we also want to build strategy to stand together for the long term, because I think, you know, all of us are realizing that protecting democracy and the planet is a lifetime responsibility. So that's kind of the overall role of the committee, but there's a really important point here, and that's that the role of the strategy committee is to make recommendations only. The larger organization will make final decisions on how we act as a group, and we got to keep in mind this is an organization of very independent people, and there will still be lots of big open space for individuals to do their own actions. And I'd say, in fact, a really smart reason for joining us is to simply get access to all the amazing resources that we're putting together that are available to anyone on the planet who wants to take action on some of these issues.
Thank you, William.
Yeah.
Well, now, Susan Scott, who is a part of the Immigration Protection and Sanctuary Cities Committee. Susan, can you give us a little rundown of what you're planning and what's happening there?
Yeah, it's probably about 20 people or so that have come to the two meetings that we've had, and a lot of the same people. And I think people are particularly fired up with the news of the raids that occurred in the last few days in all over the country, but also in L.A., and some thought that maybe sanctuary cities and sanctuary counties and states are going to be targeted for these raids. So, but I'll get to the sanctuary part, but first, just the thing I wanted to pass on is we did a little training. At our first meeting, we decided we needed some training on what were sort of people's basic rights and how do we get the information out to the immigrant population, most of whom were not at the meeting. We're having a meeting with Socorro Romo on Tuesday, this week.
Could you say for the listeners who that is?
Next week. It's next week, right, Tuesday, to move the information out. But as a lot of people know. There's a lot you can do to prepare. I mean, what you should be doing to prepare for an ICE raid is gathering your own documentation, getting your passport from your consulate, making sure everyone in the family has one, and you can try, if you are concerned about your children, get a caregiver affidavit. I mean, all these things, it seems kind of horrible to even contemplate. People do need to contemplate. And all this, you know, get your documentation together. And at our meeting on Saturday, we had a little rundown of legal rights from a immigration practitioner, Charles Nichols, who said that if you've been in the country for 10 years, even illegally, you should start gathering information to prove that you've been here continuously with no more than a 90-day gap. If you can prove that, you can get or you at least have a shot at getting a cancellation of removal, of deportation, if you do get picked up. This isn't something that you can initiate on your own, but if you get picked up, it would be something that you could use as a defense. And, of course, you have the right to refuse to open the door unless a law enforcement agent has a warrant signed by a judge. You have the right to remain silent. You don't have to speak to them. You can say, I have the right to remain silent, and then remain silent. You don't have to sign anything. And those kind of basic things were something that we went over. But as far as the sanctuary part goes, we are working with a group called Sanctuary Marin. Yeah, Sanctuary Marin. They don't have a website, but they're asking everybody who's interested in pursuing the idea of separating law enforcement from ICE in Marin County to be part of their group and to kind of write in and support them. And you just write into the email sanctuarymarin@gmail.com. And they've decided that rather than pushing the local Board of Supervisors to declare Marin a sanctuary county, that at this point their efforts are best focused on AB 54, which is the Values Act legislation that's moving through the Senate right now. It's Kevin DeLeon's bill. You may have heard him on Democracy Now! This morning talking about it. It's really a good bill that basically says local jurisdictions cannot spend any local money on assisting the ICE agents in deportations.
So I'm going to break in for a second and let listeners know, if you're just joining us, you're listening to the voice of Susan Scott, who is a member of this newly formed group in West Marin called Standing Together, which is a community response to the Trump agenda. Susan Scott is on the Immigration and Sanctuary Committee, and I'll let her finish her update in a minute. I also want to let listeners know that we will be moving on, in addition to talking about immigration and sanctuary issues in Sonoma County as well. We have Susan Lamont in studio with us, and we will be joined shortly by Norman Solomon to give sort of the national angle. So let's get back to Susan. Did I cut you off before you got to finish this very information-packed update?
I think all I need to say is that we also are gathering resources, and the National Immigration Law Center has a really good website in ILC.org for information for people who are interested, and the Immigrant Legal Resource Center is ILRC.org. That's based in San Francisco. And one more thing I just wanted to mention is there is going to be a meeting at the Marin County Office of Education on 1111 Las Gallinas on Wednesday from 3 to 5. That is a meeting. It's called Immigrant Students and Families, Legal Context and Resources. And Alyssa Simpson, who is the lawyer from the Canal Alliance that came out here and spoke at the gym at the school a few weeks ago, she's going to be speaking, and it's a workshop with a whole lot of information about DACA and issues about how to manage anxiety and concerns. So if anybody's interested in doing that, I suggest that you go on Westman and Share and try to carpool with people, because it would be good to be able to bring a lot of people over there. It's from 3 to 5 on Wednesday.
Thank you, Susan. Now we'll have a report from Willeen Ellen Sweet about climate change and the Environmental Protection Committee. Okay. Willeen?
Yes, thank you for having me on. I'll do my best to summarize everything that we're doing and everything that's going on. So it's a really very broad mandate that our committee has. We have about 20 members of the committee that have come to our two meetings so far and are sort of signing on to email notifications and continuing their roles in different areas. I'd like to start by saying the mission and role of our committee, which is, as I said, pretty broad-based. Basically, we've pulled this together at a last meeting, is in three parts, to research and respond to regulation rollbacks and hostile actions by the new administration against climate and environment protection, against public lands and wildlife protection, and against public health and safety protections. Secondly, to prioritize local, state, and national actions as these threats arise. Thirdly, to determine the best strategy to support our members of Congress and congressional committees against these threats and to align with groups who are fighting these threats in courts and in the Congress. At our meeting Saturday, we pulled together our priorities, which are pretty, once again, broad-based, when we consider that we're looking at rollback of regulations in the area of climate, environment, health and safety, wildlife protection, and public lands. And it's all happening pretty quickly, and it's all happening in a pretty concerted effort that has probably been underway for quite some time. That's why the rollout is able to be to occur in the first 3 weeks of the administration. In addition to rollback of regulations, we have ongoing harassment of NASA, EPA, and American Geophysical Union employees. That's been going on for some time. Today, I just read that a NASA scientist was detained at the border in a trip to South America. And his cell phone, which was NASA property, was taken by border security agents and not returned to him. So anyway, this is it's pretty overwhelming, and so we have discussed some of this at our committee meeting, and we've come up with five areas in which we think we can be most effective as a committee. And the first is undertaking effective communication with our local members of Congress and members of the Senate and House Environment and Public Works Committee members regarding the rollback of important climate, environmental, air and water, waste, health and safety regulations. So that's sort of the first effort. The second is to develop a local initiative for the protection of our own public lands that we cherish. And that initiative has begun by a member of our committee by producing a very fine statement of the protection of public lands locally that we intend to act on. And the next, that was the second priority. Third one is to participate in marches, both locally and nationally, that will be held for climate protection and for many other of the issues that are connected to our committee, both in Washington, D.C. and locally, and to link up with other groups who are attending those marches, who are supporting those marches, and find out ways in which we can participate. A fourth is divestment and reinvestment as it pertains to the mission of our committee. And last but not least, to link and support other groups and their legal actions that are underway right now. So that was our, those were our priorities of our committee. And as you can see, they're pretty broad. On January 30th, President Trump issued an executive order called the Reducing Regulation and Controlling Regulatory Costs. The executive order requires that the agency issuing a new rule must identify two existing regulations for repeal. And it also mandates that the cost of the new rules, without regarding their benefits, must be offset by eliminating two other rules. In effect, this executive order has the potential to block government agencies from issuing or force them to repeal new health, safety, environmental, and worker rights protection. And in particular, what's up on right now on the docket, and this is from Public Citizen, who has a suit against the Trump administration this past week. And the particular issues are new limits on workplace exposures to hazardous chemicals, new standards to prevent health workers from being exposed to infectious diseases, a rule to prevent mining equipment from crushing miners, implementation of the newly amended Toxic Substances Control Act, in which EPA has gained the authority to make progress in regulating toxic chemicals, a measure to revert oil train derailments and explosions, energy efficiency standards that would save consumers billions of dollars, endangered species protections, and certainly not last but not least, new clean air standards. These other things, these other specific issues with references and with specific citations that Public Citizen and NDRC and other parties are suing, have a suit. That it based on the unconstitutionality of this move and how legally the executive cannot roll back regulations and their implementation that were passed by Congress and passed by government agencies in the orderly manner in which they usually do that.
Yeah. Willine, I'm going to jump in. That was an incredible update. I'm going to jump in just for a sec. And I'm not sure if this is a question for you or for Bing, but given the enormous plate, the enormous list that you just made for us, and one of the points in there was as connecting with other groups who are doing the work, and your strategy committee has that too. I'm wondering, are the indivisible groups doing any networking amongst themselves? Do you have connections to the other indivisible groups?
Yeah, I did want to mention that there is an indivisible group, West Marin, and they're connected with Main Street Moms. So that's happening. If you want more information about that, you can contact me. And they're connected with other indivisible groups. I know the one in West Marin is connected with San Francisco and San Rafael and a couple other. I heard there are 6,000 indivisible groups across the country, which is quite amazing. I think it's gone viral.
And we have a subcommittee that's devoted to that particular action. So if people are interested in it, this is something we are working on kind of under the umbrella of the strategy group, but you know, it is a subcommittee of the entire organization.
And we were
right. And I just like
go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I just like to close by mentioning that our members of Congress, Kamala Harris, Dianne Feinstein, and Jared Huffman, they are members, although minority members, of important Senate and House committees that are working in the very same areas in which our committee is so concerned, and we all need to be concerned, and in which a lot of these suits and actions by the executive and suits against the executive are going on, and that specifically is the Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources, the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works, and Jared Huffman's committee, House Committee on Natural Resources. And just quickly to tell you what this, for example, the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works, what the issues that they deal with: agriculture, Army Corps of Engineers, clean air, clean water, Endangered Species Act, global warming, nuclear energy, oversight of the Environmental Protection Agency, regulatory oversight, and the Toxic Substances Control Act. Those are just the issues, and there are subcommittees, and some of our members of Congress are members of some of those subcommittees.
Thank you very much, Willeen, for your complete report. Now we have to have a station break. This is KWMR, Community Radio for West Marin. And now back to Post Carbon Radio, and we have... go ahead, Karen.
Yeah, we're now going to move from the West Marin angle to bring in Sonoma County, because KWMR does reach well into Sonoma County. And so we're very pleased to be joined in studio today by Susan Lamont, who, as we mentioned before, has played many roles in Sonoma County progressive politics, including running the Peace and Justice Center there for a long time. Most recently, and the reason we brought her here today, is because she has built, along with, I think, something like 70 organizations.
140
organizations.
Whoa.
Has built from the ground up what I'm calling a resistance tool, and it's a declaration called "It Won't Happen Here." Welcome, Susan. Thank you for being here. And why don't you tell us a little of the story of how that got started, how you got that started.
Thank you. After the election, you know, people were distraught. And I was just paying attention to it and thinking of all the different communities that had been threatened or mocked by either Trump or people he was at that point appointing. And I thought, well, we live in a state and we live in a county that is a really resistant to Trump and what he plans to do or would like to do. And we should play on that and become sort of a beacon of hope, I would say, to other places. And so I just sent out a broadcast Facebook call and just said, come down to the Peace and Justice Center this time, you know, this date. And over the course of 5 meetings with more than 70 people representing all ages, all colors, all religions, you know, just abilities, sexual identity, everything.
Legal statuses.
Legal statuses, yes. Yes. We crafted, word by word, a statement that is going to all our local city councils and our board of supervisors, sheriff, DA, telling them that we do not want them to cooperate in anything that comes from the Trump administration that would violate the human rights of anybody in the county. Now, the county has a very strong immigrants' rights network, and they've been working for a long time to protect to the best they can the immigrant community. And so they were included in this. But the statement itself is much broader than that. So it talks about detentions, deportations, registries, conversion therapies, imprisonment, any other acts that will target them. And it's immigration status, race, ethnicity, religion, country of origin, ability, political affiliation, economic status, age, gender identity, or sexual orientation. And we decided to start by, you know, I'm so used to belonging to one small group and then marching into the Board of Supervisors, and, you know, and they don't listen. And so I thought, well, what if we build a really, really huge network? And it just took off. And as I say, there are, at this point, 140 organizations, faith communities, and businesses who have signed on so far. I will be speaking to another one tomorrow. And then people started saying, well, what about individuals? So we put got an online petition, which at this point has 2,000 signatures. And then we got a hard copy one, which has another just about 2,000 at this point. And we have started approaching going to city councils and the Board of Supervisors. We did that by trying to meet individually with the supervisors, where constituents would try to make appointments. Amazingly, we're pretty much told, no, we aren't going to talk to you. Doesn't matter how many people in this county you represent. So they have so far created a very weak resolution within the county, which says that they will provide services to everybody who's in the county. That's wonderful. That's fabulous. But you end up in the system. DACA is an example of this one. But you end up in the system, and as yet they have no way to protect you if the Trump administration were to come and say, we want the list of everybody getting such and such service. At the moment, there's nothing to protect them. And I really want to do a shout out to the people in the group who are in Petaluma, which is, I assume, in the range of this.
Yes.
Station. Yes. They are so organized, and they got about 300 people to show up at this last city council meeting just to promote this statement, which we are calling It Won't Happen Here. And it will be on the
27th.
Yeah, the next council meeting, right?
It's on the agenda for the 27th, which is another Monday night.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. Yes.
Wow.
So we're taking it to commissions, and those commissions are made up of people who know the supervisors, who were, you know, personally appointed by the supervisors, and an edited version was passed by the Commission on Human Rights, and then one was passed by the Commission on the Status of Women. And we don't have anything in here about the Constitution. They wanted the Constitution in there because they swear to uphold the Constitution. So that they've added that, and they are taking that to their supervisors. They want to make it a gold star resolution, which is a much bigger thing than their normal resolution. The other thing that they're doing is taking it to the State Association of Commissions on the Status of Women. They say this has to go statewide. And that's really what we're talking about, is we want California to stand as a place that absolutely says it stops at our border, it's not happening here, and that becomes an inspiration for people in other states. So that's the main focus of it.
Thank you. And I just want to note that the point of connection I see between what you are reporting and what the West Marin folks are reporting is the phrase I wrote down at the beginning, which is overwhelming response. And we're just seeing that everywhere. We saw that at the Sonoma County Engagement Fair, where 5,000 people showed up.
1,000 people signed our petition that day.
Really?
Yes.
And Petaluma held a follow-up fair, and that place, you were there as well.
Yes.
Do you want to say just a word about that?
You mean the
at Aucus Cafe?
Oh no, I actually, it was so crowded, and Sam was there to represent. So I just said, okay, I'm not even going to try to get in here. So we actually went somewhere else and had dinner.
Good for you. Activists have to take care of themselves.
Right.
Yeah, I think this is happening all over the country in communities. People are, like you said, Karen, it's the tsunami of activism happening. But now we want to take a look at the national perspective, and we have Norman Solomon, longtime peace activist and journalist and a former congressional candidate and a Bernie candidate. Norman, welcome to Post Carbon Radio.
Oh, thank you. Thanks to everybody here. You know, I've been listening since the top of the hour, first on the car radio, and I have to say that the amount of local regional organizing is just crucial. You know, the only strength from national organizing is as the aggregate of what people are doing in communities around the country. What Susan Lamont has done has had national reverberations through the It Won't Happen Here effort and so much leadership, as you mentioned, Susan, in Petaluma and elsewhere in Sonoma County. I want to note, just as a, just not a, only a historical notation, but also I think it's important to keep in mind that while the Trump regime is horrific and so many policies coming down on us now are just very extreme, they have their roots in what has been happening for periods of decades. And in Sonoma County, we have somebody on the Board of Supervisors, David Rabbit, who came in on a tide of racism and xenophobia, Willie Horton flyers, which were sent out on his behalf to defeat Pam Torliat. This is half a dozen years ago. And what becomes first outrageous then becomes normalized, and people don't deal with the fact that a lot of the power that's not only held by the Trump and the Republicans, but a lot of others, has come in on pandering to some of the worst aspects of our society. And I think it's wonderful that now, in the midst of this horrific situation politically and socially around the country, so many people are organizing and challenging ourselves. And I think in terms of nationwide action, we're going to be seeing more and more the synergies of what people are doing in different communities to gain strength nationally, because we're past the old dualisms of doing organizing in the streets and in communities or election organizing. We need to do all of that, education, outreach, agitation, election work, candidates, as well as measures that promote certain referenda, lobbying. And we're also, I think, moving way beyond the idea that we must be deferential to people who are elected officials. And I mean including the most liberal Democrats. When we defer to their timetable, then we ratify the momentum of the Trump administration. And I really believe that it's not anything but truth that when people lead from the grassroots, only then will leaders follow if we can force them to do it.
And that's why I would say when we get the Commission on the Status of Women to endorse this, David Rabbit has been very clear. He is not going to discuss this with anybody. But now his appointed commissioners who know him are taking it to him. And that's what needs to happen.
Yeah.
Well, I hear impeachment is in the air. Can you tell us a little bit about what's happening there, Norman?
Yes. I think in the last few weeks, as we've seen just the decimation of policies coming from the Trump regime, that any hopes that people had that there would be a moderate element to his own personality or his policies, I think that's gone pretty much by the boards. You know, there's a story that's not only apocryphal but apparently true that when Trump was offering the vice presidential slot to John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, he said, John, you know, you can be in charge of foreign policy and you can be in charge of domestic policy. And Kasich is said to have replied, well, Donald, then what are you going to do? And it's clear that he's good at watching Saturday Night Live and tweeting and having high-profile meetings, but policy is being left largely to Pence already. And the policies, with very rare exceptions, are right out of the Pence playbook, the economic policies, the bigotry, the xenophobia. So this thought that, well, we don't want to get rid of Trump because we get Pence, I think is very ahistorical. When, because of the impeachment movement, Nixon was forced out of the White House, the Republican Party was sent back on its heels. They were decimated in the following midterm elections in 1974. They found their party in tatters because it split wide open. People forget that the House Judiciary Committee had seven Republicans vote for impeachment against the Republican president, Richard Nixon. And if we're going to get impeachment here, and I think we have a decent chance, it's going to be a marathon, it will require at least two dozen Republicans in the House, at least 19 senators in the U.S. Senate, because of the two-thirds requirement to oust the president, to vote for impeachment. Can you imagine what that would do to the Republican Party? So I think we have an opportunity now to move forward. Just if you monitor, if you type into Google impeach Trump, you will see a cascade of coverage where what was dismissed even 2 weeks ago as extremely unlikely is now being talked about, including by Republicans, as a real possibility. And I would just, you know, wrap up on this note by saying that because of organizing, We now have at the website impeachdonaldtrumpnow.org 850,000 signers, and that's just the beginning. It's not about names on a page or pixels on a screen. It's about everybody there has signed up, has information, and they have entered their zip codes, which means we already have an average of 2,000, and in this congressional district, several thousand people. We know where they are. We are connected by email. The lobbying phase begins as we continue to grow this petition into the millions to organize effectively to demand that members of Congress introduce and support an impeachment resolution.
And if you're just joining us, that was the voice of Norman Solomon. Norman Solomon is currently with Roots Action, and you can find among that Google search you might do his latest article on the Huffington Post entitled "The Long Road to Impeach Trump Just Got Shorter." We are talking today about organizing in the Trump era and connecting local organizing to what's going on in Washington, D.C., and we're joined by a group of activists from West Marin who are organized under the banner of Standing Together, and Susan Lamont from Sonoma County talking about the It Won't Happen Here petition, which is catching fire across the county, and actually the language has caught fire nationally. I'm not sure who to open it to next. There's so many questions. But, Norman, I wonder if you have any inside scoop, because we're looking to you for your D.C. Info connections. Do you know who's behind the Indivisible? Is that at all connected to the Democratic Party, or is that really just sort of a here's-how-you-do-it manual that came from the former staffers? Do you have any idea?
Well, those staffers, as I understand it, were surprised that it caught fire. They released that document. It's very savvy. It's very astute. And people recognized, hey, this is one of the tools we need to really run with. The Democratic Party organizationally is sort of tailing a lot of this energy. And I want to say just parenthetically, one of the things that has happened, I think, is it definitely refutes the myth that somehow there's no difference between a Republican regime and a Democratic regime. That is just obviously nonsense, and we're seeing that day to day. We're also seeing refutation of the myth that you can depend on the Democratic Party leadership to challenge the right wing, because that's sort of a mirror false concept. It's only when people organize. So in the case of the Indivisible folks, they ran with it. They moved with it. They gave us information and insights. And then activists around the country have organized and said, we're going to use this as part of our toolbox. So I think it's now where the pressure from the grassroots, to get back to the impeachment for a moment, Gerald Nadler, the congressperson, has taken a first step by introducing what's called a resolution of inquiry a few days ago into the Congress. And that can force its way onto the House floor to have a vote on whether the Attorney General will be instructed to hand over all sorts of information, primarily about Donald Trump's conflicts of interest, his big empire into the billions of dollars of the Trump Organization. And that is, as we point out with great documentation, I think, at the impeachdonaldtrumpnow.org website, is a direct violation of the two emoluments clauses of the Constitution, foreign and domestic, which absolutely forbid the president from gaining financially other than getting the salary as president of the United States. And this guy, Trump, as in so many other ways, prevaricates. But at one point he said, well, a president can't have a conflict of interest, which is reminiscent of what Nixon said when he, as president, proclaimed, I'm President Nixon, and if a president does it, it's not illegal. So that's what we're dealing with now.
Yeah, I think one of the things that concerns me in terms of the zeitgeist of the moment is not just that it is sort of a wrecking crew. The people are being brought in deliberately to sort of implode the agencies from the inside, and it's obvious from their connections and their loyalties in the past. But also, you know, there's been talk of an incipient constitutional crisis since before Trump took office, and it's really sort of contempt for the rule of law, which is ironic if you're as old as I am and you remember how the rule of law was a right-wing, you know, tagline for a couple decades there.
Yeah.
Anything more you want to tell us? I mean, we have a little under 10 minutes left to go.
I want to go back to, again, Pence. Now, if Trump gets a peach and Pence goes in there, what do you see?
Well, politically, he'd be extremely weakened. Mm-hmm. First of all, the block of Republicans in the House and Senate would be splintered. Just imagine the bitterness. I mean, by definition, as I said, you'd have to have a very large block of Republicans voting to impeach. And then what is Pence's position? Does he toss Trump overboard in that process? Well, that would enrage a lot of Tea Party people and other constituents of Trump. On the other hand, if he hangs there with Trump and Trump is repudiated, again, it weakens Trump's leverage inside Congress to get anything through. And while nobody has a crystal ball, I think that sort of a situation is far better for not only progressives, but people of decency, than to say, well, Trump is president. We totally play defense. We let him make his horrible moves for the next 4 years. So, you know, this is a situation where there are no good short-term outcomes. We can't compare one scenario or another to something that we're going to be happy about. But we've got to mitigate the damage and also develop a lot of momentum so that, as I believe is true, the best electoral weapon against the Republican regime on a national scale is the Democratic candidates, the more and more progressive, the better. We need to enable a huge wave of Republican defeats next year in the November elections.
How about third parties?
Well, I think they've shown themselves nationally to be worse than useless. I mean, look at the preposterous things that were said by Jill Stein last year. She said repeatedly that Hillary Clinton has already done what Donald Trump is talking about doing. Now, how preposterous can you get? And I'm not just hindsight. I was saying so at the time. Let me make a sharp distinction between that and the terrific work being done with Green Party leadership, for instance, in Richmond, California, just across the bridge from here, where for years, Green Party leaders, including Gail McLaughlin, rather than being sectarian, rather than being, you know, we're better or smarter than anybody else, it's been a very wide tent. Everybody in the Richmond Progressive Alliance has worked together effectively. And I think clearly, as we've seen in Fairfax and elsewhere, when you have Green Party leadership, third party leadership that is inclusive, that is open, that builds coalition, you can get the job done. And what is one of the commonalities there? Those are nonpartisan elections in Richmond and Fairfax and elsewhere. And so Green Party leaders have truly provided leadership. And I think that's where it goes. The idea that you can build this structure by first putting on the roof as a presidential campaign is not working. It clearly is not working. You build a foundation, and what you do is you build foundations at local levels.
Yeah, and as a member of the county council of the Green Party in Sonoma County, I have, through this work that I'm doing right now, avoided that partisan policy argument because, you know, we're in agreement on this issue. I would also agree that you do build your party from the bottom up. For me, Jill Stein is someone who is a voice of conscience that I found really lacking in the election. And I would agree with her that she just does a subtler version. There's a way for corporations to take control of the country, and one is subtler, and that's Clinton's. And then there is the bash everybody over the head version, and that is Trump. But their goals are not that far apart, in my opinion. But that's not why I'm here.
Yeah. You know, when I ran across backstage at an event 4 years ago in Wisconsin, a swing state, with Jill, I said, "What are you doing here? Campaigning in a swing state? There are safe states around the country where you can campaign. You can see on the web that Jill campaigned in Pennsylvania just weeks before this last election, where Trump carried Pennsylvania. You know, I'd invite people to look at those numbers in the swing states in the upper Midwest where Jill campaigned, and you know, draw your own conclusions about where we are now, where we would be if Trump were not president and had lost the election instead of winning."
Well, I want to throw in there and connect back to the Democratic Party, because when I asked you, Norman, about whether there was any coordination by the Democrats for the indivisible work, you said they were tailing them. And yeah. I wasn't quite sure what you meant by that.
Tailing.
Before I finish,
yeah, sure.
Just a sec.
Uh-huh.
I want to, because I think there was an opportunity, there may still be an opportunity for a serious reform of the Democratic Party. But my fear is that if there's a division of the Republican Party, that the crisis on the Democratic side will be removed and there will be no reform, and we'll have business as usual with the Democrats in the course of taking out the Republicans in that scenario you were starting to roll out. What are your comments on that?
Yeah, well, your question about tailing, by that I mean that they try to follow and get momentum like driving behind an 18-wheeler from the grassroots organizing and the enthusiasm from the base of the country. It's always about struggle. It's always about organizing. And that's how the Bernie campaign got so strong. And we have fights up and down this state and across the country about who's going to control. You know, it's always about 24/7, 365. Where's the power? And corporate power is so strong in both parties, and we've got to fight it.
I think we need to wrap it up. Unfortunately, I'd like to thank all the people from Standing Together West Marin who joined us, William Now, Willine, Eileen Sweet, and Susan Scott, and Susan Lamont from Sonoma, and Norman Solomon. Thank you so much. And I'd like to have a couple of announcements. There is going to be a demonstration Wednesday, February 15th. Outside the Wells Fargo Bank and Hedge Fund SCO Partners in Mill Valley, 591 Redwood Highway Frontage Road. They're both major pipeline and funders. And as we reported both in January with Will Parrish, who broke the story on SCO Partners in the North Bay Bohemian late last year. And they'll be carpooling, leaving Point Reyes Station in front of Toby's at 11 a.m. So please join us if you want to protest the funders of the Dakota Pipeline.
And is that starting at noon?
Starting at noon.
Okay, and then
in Mill Valley.
Later that day, I want to repeat an announcement that we heard earlier that from 3 to 5 at the Marin Department of Education, there will be an event. At 1111 Las Galinas about DACA and the anxiety that immigrants are facing, and there's going to be a Marin Share carpool on that too, right? Do we still have the speaker who had the details on that?
I'm not sure of that.
Oh, okay. But that's what that was. She also mentioned that people can look for national information on immigration and know your rights at NILC.org and at ILRC.org.
And I'd like to announce, if you'd like to plug into our Standing Together West Marin Resist Trump group, please contact me at Bingong, B-I-N-G-G-O-N-G, at sonic.org. Net. And you can call me also at 415-766-1439. Thank you very much for joining us on Postcard
Radio.
Thanks,
everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm trying to spread the word about this immense issue, but I find it absurd why so many people are confused. Some people don't understand the weight of this problem. Act now before it gets out of hand, cause Earth is calling. I was 10 years old, exposed to it. The inconvenient truth really made me concerned how it was going to affect the youth. The temp is still rising from the pollution we produce. We need to start striving.